Hello, this is producer Ben, and if you enjoy listening to great Catholic content like this, then please consider supporting The Quest Atlanta, where we do our very best to make Catholic content that's engaging, thought-provoking, and spiritually fruitful. So if that sounds like the kind of content you want to listen to, then please consider going over to thequestatlanta.com and dropping a dollar or two in the old tip jar. Thanks so much, and keep on listening.
AM 1160 The Quest presents Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? A show for young adults by young adults.
Hello, this is producer Ben, and on this episode of Honest to God, we communicate about communication and how different types of communication affect us as people. Whether it be meeting up with someone to talk face to face or just sending a quick text, communication is a cornerstone of relationships. And if you learn to use it correctly, you might just make a lifelong friend. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
All right, everybody, super pumped to be here today. Hello and welcome. You're listening to Honest to God on AM 1160, The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic radio. We got a totally fresh-faced returning crew here today. Don't or totally ignore the fact that Haley and Michael are wearing the exact same clothes they were last week when we recorded.
I washed them real quick and then...
They really like the
shirt.
We do a lot of prep for this show, and it takes about 7 days to get ready and get in the studio.
Yep, definitely.
So we're here today and we're going to be talking about communications. It's kind of an open topic, but basically we're going to get into the ins and outs of communication in the modern world, saying what we mean, meaning what we say, and just all the pitfalls and, as weird as it sounds to say, like dangers of communicating in the modern world and how difficult that can be with the thousand different things that we've got going on. But first, we're going to pray. And Haley, you prayed for us last time. Have you ever prayed for us, Michael?
I have not.
Would you mind?
Sure.
All right.
In the name of Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Come, Lord Jesus, come into this space. Teach us how to pray and also how to communicate. Communicate through us on this episode so that those who are listening hear what they need to hear and we say what you want us to say. Bless us in our everyday lives and all those who are listening to communicate well and communicate your word. In your name we pray. Amen.
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 Holy Spirit. That was great. So since you are all veterans, we are just going to do one fact. One fun fact, Haley. It's got to be fun.
Okay.
All right. I forget what one of the years from last time I feel like wasn't fun. Oh, that was McKenzie's. McKenzie's was boring.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say. I came.
All right. So let's start with JJ and then move down. Just with one fun fact.
I've eaten 50 wings, and the fun part is that it was all in one sitting.
That's cool.
If you add them up total, it's way more than 50.
This probably says something about my lack of like confidence in my own masculinity or something, but I was at Rooster's Cafe. This episode of Honest to God is actually brought to you by Rooster's Cafe, two locations, Rooster's downtown Cafe. Cumming and on 400 up towards Dahlonega. It's incredible. And I got the secret wings. So they've got the menu, and the hottest wings on the menu are called Rooster Red. They're incredible. They're just the right amount of hot. It's not like a chemical hot. It's like a good taste hot. But I heard there were secret wings. So I asked for the secret wing, and they're just like a combination of numbers and letters, right? So I got 10 Rooster Reds, and then I got 5 of these secret wings. And I ate all my Rooster Reds first, and then I started on my secret wings, all right? It was the hottest thing I've ever had in my life. Like, it was painful. My wife was sitting there. My son was sitting there. And I'm like, it was when I'm tearing up. I'm sweating. My stomach's so full from taking water. I had to like gauge my little sips of water and all this stuff so I didn't feel. It was terrible. And I came to this point where I was just going to walk away, which would have been the mature thing to do. I had like 3 wings left. Could have just walked away. But I had this moment of, like, would George Washington have let his son see him walk away from these wings and say they're too hot? No. And then I ate the rest of them, and I regretted it for, like, the next week. Oh. It was horrible. So that's kind of a brag, but also I'm sort of ashamed of that. Not a mature decision.
You know, it's terrible. Past 2 times I've gone to Taco Mac, mm-hmm. the sweet barbecue wings, the cook's doing something wrong. The first, like, 3 are sweet barbecue. But I think he, like, accidentally spills a whole bucket of spice in.
Oh, no.
So the past 3 times, I'm eating barbecue wings, and I'm just enjoying my life. And then everyone sees me just start, like, just, like, start tearing up.
And then you have to admit, it's the sweet barbecue.
I can't handle the sweet barbecue. They're like, whoa, what kind did you get? Better not get those. And I'm like, sweet barbecue. Like, okay.
So the next podcast is everyone doing that hot challenge where we have to be eating hot wings as we talk about God.
I'm so down with doing
not
that.
Be part
so
of that. Neat.
Love it. All right, Nini, what's your fact?
I am graduating in May my bachelor.
Heck yeah.
Whoa.
Thank you.
From where?
KSU.
Big shout out to KSU. Go out.
Hootie-hoo.
That's it. For my first year and a half of college, I dated a girl who went to KSU. I made lots of trips down to Kennesaw. Didn't work out. So, pretty sure I found the one, though.
I'm glad.
Yeah, when my wife looked at me and said, I'm pregnant with your fourth child, I thought, you know what? This is going to work out. Feel good about this one. Yeah. No, that is great. Congratulations,
Thank
Nene.
Thank you.
Miss Haley, all the way from Lander, Wyoming.
True. My fun fact is that last winter, I cross-country skied into the Tetons and built snow caves and lived in them for 3 days.
That's a really fun fact.
Yeah. It was really fun. It was really cold. But it was fun.
That's way cooler than Ben's suggested fun fact for you, which was to be like the 18th person to tell us, like, you've been rock climbing before.
Oh, yeah. I also rock climb.
That's awesome.
Rock climbing's cool, guys.
Yeah. You come up with your fun, not rock climbing related fact, Ben, because you're up in a second. But after Michael.
My fun fact is I was tricked to swimming with a shark.
Nice.
You got to give us a little background.
The shark tricked you?
No, I was in the Galapagos, which has all the wildlife and stuff, and you swim with penguins and turtles and everything, and I was like, I want to swim with a shark, but a safe shark, and, you know, one of the little guys.
Yeah.
And so these guys were on this boat, they start throwing chum outside of the boat to get this shark, and there was this like 8-foot shark that just started circling the boat, and I was like, that's awesome. And I go to them and I'm like, hey, is that shark safe? They're like, yeah. So I just jumped right in. So I went swimming up next to it, just like doing one of those little mermaids, and got like 3 feet away from it. It kind of like looked at me and then like swam away. And I was like, that was cool. And I swim back up, and they all at the back of the boat, they're like, what are you doing? And I was like, you said it was safe. They're like, we were joking.
I was like, okay, I like great. The idea of there being a category of safe shark. And I'm sure that when I was in Belize on my honeymoon, and they did the same thing. They were chumming and everything. And they said, we're going to swim with sharks, but it was like, they're safe sharks. And I later found out they were nurse sharks. They don't have teeth or whatever. But they were like 9 feet long, 8 feet long, and they just come at you. And there's this primal, like, I'm not supposed to be here with that. I got out of the water really quick. I embarrassed myself in front of my bride. But by then, she's already married to me. Nothing she could do.
She's not going anywhere.
No. Huh. All right, Ben, you got to give us one. What's yours?
See, it was going to be about rock climbing. Like, not joking.
Yes.
But I'm going to change it up. I'm going to say that when I was a child, I was a child actor on Ooh. One episode of one sitcom.
Ooh.
Which was
called Mass Confusion. It was a Catholic sitcom starring my parents and our friends the Willies.
Yeah. Can we find it on YouTube right now?
You can. If you look up Mass Confusion Catholic TV, or like Mass Confusion Greg and Jennifer,
right.
Then you can find me as a small redheaded child playing with a toy in the background of a old, really crappy Catholic sitcom.
That sounds great.
Did it come on after Ninja Turtles? Because I think I remember that one.
Hey, man. I would watch the heck out of a show starring your parents, the Willets, and you. There was a Catholic-based sitcom.
Didn't test well.
All right, that's fantastic. So let's get into the topic today, which is communication in general. And this was Michael's idea before the show, to open it up with biggest communication fails that you've had. And there's a lot of ways to interpret that. I'm going to let everybody interpret it how they will. But I'll open with one that I brought up earlier. Mary Swanson, who's been on the show, who's 22, 23, something like that. She was a youth minister who worked with me doing a youth group for years. And I met her when she was in the youth group program. And then after she graduated from high school, she started working with us. And she's a close friend. I love her to death. And one day I was texting with my wife and Mary at the same time about something coming up with the youth group. And so my conversation with Mary went something like, hey, do we have food lined up for Sunday? And then my response was something along the lines of, like, the first message was, yes, I think the Johnsons are bringing it. Let me check. And then the next one was, I love you, and I can't wait to see you tonight. And I have never picked up a phone and called someone multiple times so fast to try to clarify a statement that I just made to a 21-year-old youth minister.
Uh-huh.
So that was super uncomfortable and awkward, and I
probably
made your communication
for a
fail. Yeah. Fortunately, she picked up, but not the first time. I remember that distinctly. She didn't pick up, and I left her a message and then immediately called back, and she answered because she thought I was, like, in a car accident. Uh-huh. Got to her before she even read the text.
Nice.
Pro move.
There you go. Yeah.
All right, what you got, JJ?
I mean, I'm totally mentally healthy, so I totally don't block out these things as soon as they happen.
I totally don't think about them every time I'm trying to fall asleep or taking a shower every day for the rest of my life and just cringe silently.
But and thing is, I'm so mentally healthy that I'm so good at blocking these out that I'm having trouble recalling them. But what I do know is that I'm just terrible at texting in general.
That's fair.
It's hard to get more than 5 texts, and I think it's because I'm trying too hard to shine my personality through my text, which is really hard to do. It's really hard to do.
I think all the time about that Key and Peele skit, if you've ever seen it, where the two guys are texting.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
talking
about?
That's a great skit.
And one of them thinks the other one's being so sweet, but the other one's like reading the tone differently, and by the end, one of them's showing up to like murder the other guy. He's like, buddy! Yeah, so that is me behind a phone screen. Yep. Nini, I know you got a good one.
Why do you assume that?
You do, though, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
All right, what is it?
So when I was younger, my mom was home with me and everything, and for some reason, I don't know the context of it, but she was, I think, shaving her legs, and then I found the razor, and she, like, put it down. I'm like, okay, so I put it down, and she picked it back up. So I picked another razor back up, and she was like, don't shave anything. I'm like, and all I heard was, shave something. So I shaved the end of my eyebrows, and one of my eyebrows does not grow back since I was a kid.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Wow.
It continued, like,
just... I think it's like this one, so like, I have to continuously draw like the end of it. So I think like this eyebrow is shorter than this eyebrow. Fun fact.
That's a fun fact that you can't use on the later episode.
Dang it.
Sorry.
But yeah, communication fail. Do not do what your mom does in the bathroom when you're younger.
Okay.
You'll have, like, short eyebrows.
I like that. All right. Haley, what you got?
Oh no. Here, skip me. Come back to me.
Michael, what you got?
So when I was in college, I had a longish-term relationship, and I constantly found myself in the situation where my girlfriend at the time would ask, like, what are you thinking? And if you haven't heard many of the comedy bits, but also scientists who say that, you know, women you might not understand, but men can literally think of nothing. And women you just can't. And I fell into the trap that she probably didn't realize at the time she was putting me in, because she also learned that when you before say that, I feel obligated to say something, then just say something that comes to mind, but not really what I was thinking about. And then there would be more questions about that thing, which then put me down a rabbit hole, which then led to a fight, and then 3 hours of of mess. And so I learned very quickly to not answer those questions. If I truly am not thinking something, just don't come up with something, because you're ultimately going to put a foot in your mouth and lead to somewhere else.
But I feel like they never believe you when you say nothing. Right? It's always like, what are you thinking about? Nothing. And then, no. And a lot of times, my answer at least isn't actually nothing. It's like, what was the name of the green Power Ranger? Right? It's
like, so say something ridiculous.
Yeah.
What was that? I was thinking about the hottest wings that I ever ate my entire life. But we were just talking about our child. I know, but
we got one thing. I can't track the thought. Just trust me.
I think that's how Buddhism started.
Is
the
it?
Whole meditation thing, yeah, 1500 years ago.
Just so many rabbit holes were going down.
Your girlfriend was like, what are you thinking about? And he said, nothing. And she was like, no, you can't think about nothing. And he said, I'm going to start a whole religion.
I'm going to show you. The goal of my existence is to realize, not just think about, but realize that I am, and all of you are also, nothing and yet everything. Mm. Boom. I like that theory. Haley.
You guys have probably gone through this too, where you're on the phone with somebody that you don't know very well, like a customer service person, and then you accidentally say, okay, love you, goodbye. And you're like, oh, shoot, darn it. Should not have. Well,
I can tell, Haley, by your personality, having known you for a while, and I've never seen this, you've never told me this, when you're on the phone talking to somebody for a long time, you pace back and forth around a house.
Yes. Yeah.
I knew it. You got one of those faces of a pacer. Yeah. I'm a pacer too.
A walker.
Yeah. I'm a pacer.
Probably the most common like miscommunication I do is along those lines, where it's like I've got this script in my head that I usually say. It usually happens at work, like customer service, that sort of thing.
Yep.
So, and usually I'll just have it set up, and no matter what the person says, I just say what I was going to say and say with such confidence. They'll be like, okay, thanks for helping me find everything today. And I'll be like, you two have a good one, bye. But I say with a bunch of confidence, and it always works out.
Yeah. So. I weren't even listening.
So I have a question, because we were talking about this a little earlier. I'm either on the high end of young adult, or I'm now in the solid adult. I think once we have a kid, then I'm definitely solid adult. But question, I've noticed this as I've talked with some of the younger people in our community. When I primarily say talk, I mean nowadays that means text. Mm-hmm. To your point about, like, you know, bad at texting. What I found is that's just generationally, but that's like 5 years, that seems way more prevalent when I'm talking people who are just even 5 years younger than me, is that ghosting seems like it's just a totally reasonable response. And is it just that they, sometimes in my head I'm like, is it literally that you just forgot and you have so many texts, or is it just that I see that and I'm just not going to respond, and that's an appropriate response that they will get what I mean by not responding? I'm curious. Like,
no, that's a great question. Yeah, because I've ghosted plenty of people on accidents, right? Because I'm like, I'm going to get to that, I promise. Yeah. And then I just forget about it. Yeah. But the phenomenon of I'm purposely ghosting you and you're supposed to read something from that. It's generally accepted.
And I think it comes from the app culture of like dating app culture, where it's like, oh, we're dating, and the natural now progression of we've split up is you just kind of stop talking. And I saw that pre-getting married, but now it seems like that's just the accepted norm, it seems like now. And don't know if that, in my own justification, 50% of me thinks, yes, I'm just giving the benefit of the doubt, that just got lost in it. But in the other 50%, it's the question of, has it been normalized through this odd, you know, now normalized app dating and awkward dismissal? I don't know. That's a genuine question for people who are younger than me.
I think that there are challenges that have come with like this instantaneous communication that we have with texting, and everyone all of a sudden has to have more answers in a given amount of time than they needed to. Mm-hmm. 100 years ago, maybe a couple people send you a letter every once in a while, and people know that the pigeons take a while. They get if you can take some time to construct your answer, but now like hundreds of people might be texting you. And I think ghosting is not a reasonable response, but because some people have trouble with that pressure, so many people do it that it's become normalized. What I've realized I do when I'm texting is I realize if I feel like I don't have a good enough thing to respond to someone, I subconsciously like put it off until I feel like I have a good answer. If someone's like, oh, we should hang out soon, and I'm super busy, what I should say is, I'm so sorry, I'm super busy right now, but I really want to hang out with you. Could you text me this same message in like 2 weeks? But what I typically do is I'm like, I'm just not going to respond to this person until I'm available. And then I'll be like, yes, awesome.
My world opened up so much when I realized I could turn off read receipts on my phone. Or I can make it so people couldn't tell if I read something, because then I quit feeling bad. Because once again, I've never done it purposely. I've never tried to communicate something by not communicating, like purposefully in text or anything. But I hate the idea of this is a text. What happens all the time is I'm going to respond to this totally, absolutely going to do this, and then I forget about it, and then 2 weeks go by, and then they text me again, and I feel like I'm just a jerk.
I fall into the thing of like I will see the text and I'll think of a response, and then I'll put the phone away thinking I replied. And I'll go about my day, and like a day or two will pass, and they'll text me back. They're like, so are you going to answer my question? I'm like, I thought I already did. Here is my response that I thought I sent days ago.
Well, I am curious, and we can go down whatever rabbit hole you want to, but about what your opinions, and I don't want to sound like the old fogey here, but what your opinions are on our whole communication moving from face-to-face to a text-based, and I don't just mean text, meaning just text messages, but be it social media, be it apps, be it whatever you're doing, right? Text-based communications and the effect that you guys think that has on us as human beings. We saw when we did an episode recently where we had Brian call in, and it was great. We had all these issues, and there was a little bit of a delay sometime. There were so many times when I thought during that, oh my gosh, I wish that he were just here, and I could look at him in real time and have that. And I think there is something missing there, but I'm curious about your opinions on what impact that has on us and our ability to communicate and build relationships with other people.
Yeah, I kind of had an interaction that made me realize something like this morning, where I went to go pick up food for my mom, and I walked up to the lady because I'd called in the order to get it faster because I'm impatient. And I walked up to her and I just said, pick up for Haley. Like, I didn't say hi. Like, I didn't say, friendly thing. Like, good morning. Like, and then it like, in a way that, I don't know, ordering through phones, texting through people has kind of removed the person from it, right? That you kind of can get straight to your point by just, typing something and sending it, right? And so you kind of, yeah, you avoid kind of the personal interaction that you have with the person.
Yeah, I don't just want to sort of crap on it and say, isn't it terrible? Because obviously it's made our lives a lot more convenient in a lot of ways. There's a lot of times when I don't need to have an hour-long conversation with Haley to find out if your mom's bringing dinner to youth group tonight, right? It's just like, hey, y'all got dinner tonight? And then a yes is fine. Yeah. But I think something is lost, and I think that's an interesting concept to dig into.
I think the big thing that I've noticed is that it's we see it as a So what I'm about to say, we see it as a positive, but it's actually more of a negative in that it removes a lot of the pain, the potential pain and discomfort from conversations, mm-hmm. which on the surface, that can be a great thing. Hey, if we have a better conversation, a conversation where we can communicate messages, but remove some of the pain from it, because it's easier, more so it's easier, so it feels less painful, then on the surface, that's better. But when you're dealing with a subject that... or a response that's needed, like an apology, or like, hey, I should have done it, or I should have done that. Because we're not used to the pain and discomfort of having to deal with that situation. When you're in person and that get addressed, you're forced, you build this condition of, hey, it's discomfort, but you can survive and you learn to go through that when that's the right scenario. I think that a good way of, a good example of this was, if you have a disagreement with, like, housemates. I remember when I was living with a bunch of guys, and there are certain situations can totally be handled with text, but there's other ones where it's like, we'd all kind of lived in this environment. We wasn't totally spoken, but it's like, hey, significant other, like, spent the night. And we know, like, we probably nothing happened, but also wasn't something you should say in text. And so it's like, right. You say that in text, then that can be pulled or come off in a very different situation versus like, hey, this is a situation where you might text me, hey, you want to go for a walk later?
Sure.
Like, that might be the initiation versus then when you have the conversation, you can have the lead up. You can, you're able to, like, through, like, we are humans and we communicate, like, what is it, 90% of it through our bodies and, like, mm-hmm. only through the voice. But you can communicate that there is actual desire and intentionality between, like, bringing up why you're, not that you're concerned because it's like, it's like, hey, you've said that you don't want, I don't think actually anything happened, but this, you know, be able to have a nuanced conversation and get nuanced, through so you can actually get through it, and it's uncomfortable, mm-hmm. but it's not as uncomfortable being in person. But I think because that shift is being so much of the text, I feel like people haven't had the opportunity to see that other end of being in person as much, mm-hmm. especially when you've grown up with text, that seeing the advantages of some of that in person. Now, I'm totally of the fan of, like, meetings and a lot of messages. They should be text and email and just get that done.
A lot easier, mm-hmm. yeah.
But there's certain situations that no.
Yeah, but that, I think the distinction is, right, that in those meetings, or if it's something work-related, or I just need a yes-no answer about food coming over later, mm-hmm. or something, that doesn't involve, at least not as much, this reliance on you understanding that I see you as a person, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm not trying to say that your relationships at work or whatever don't matter on the same level, but I am saying that if I just need to make sure that all the PTS reports are done, right? I can send you an email about that, and that's just a yes or no. But if I'm trying to interact with you not as my boss or my employee, but as, hey, guy that I care about,
yeah,
I think that nuance is so incredibly critical. Mm-hmm. I've gotten apologized to people via text so many times, and then met that person face to face and thought, ooh, I need to do this again. Yeah. I clearly need to go back to that. That's not a resolved issue. Whereas if I'm looking in your eyes, I think it's different.
One thing I found, I used to work at a film studio, and so we had, like, projects we had to do. I was an editor, so I was constantly talking to project leaders and creative leads and things like that, and we used Slack. And we'd always, like, send very basic information or basic notes that, like, I would know all the information by just, like, a sentence.
Right.
If I was able to gather all the information by that, then it would be, like, that communication would go over text. But if it was anything more advanced than that, if there was any idea that needed to be relayed with a little more nuance, a call was had. Somebody just picked up the phone and called me. Or we started a Zoom call or started a Google Meet. And so any time, like, something couldn't be communicated in a quick, concise manner, and everything that needed to be understood was understood at that point, and in person, face-to-face, because it's a creative medium.
Right.
Creativity flows from, like, natural conversation and that's not a word, but, mm-hmm. like, comes from us being human beings, and texting kind of takes that part out of it.
I mean, I would say if I were trying to give it a hierarchy of the best way to communicate with people, I would say looking them in the eyes face to face, looking to them into the eyes on a computer screen while having a Zoom call, phone conversations, texting. Because I think there's so much that's even lost in phone conversations. I read this great thing about the effect that that was had on young children because of all the masking during the pandemic. And they were talking about how these kids were behind in all of these different skills because they couldn't see their teachers' faces and see the way that their face was moving. And so they're having a hard time understanding like emotional maturity and stuff like that. They thought was taking a hit as a result. And I'm sure that that affects, I mean, it's probably a lot more significant when we're dealing with texting communication.
I think also what's important, what I've learned, I've come to learn through mistake and trial and error, is that so much of the so much of communication can actually be like, if there's a crucial high impact conversation, whatever that may be, that if you're going to that conversation with only that situation, that conversation at hand, you're probably going to fail. And that the best conversations come in anticipating and also setting up all the things outside of what could happen, then bringing that to the conversation. Right. A good example of that is with your friends, right? And I think this is, as Catholics, we see this of someone says they want to live in a certain way and you see them not necessarily living in that way and you say, well, how should I do this? And a lot of times the wrong way to deal with that is, hey, so-and-so, you said you were going to be doing this, but I just saw you go and do this with her, or that with him. And like, I'm calling you up because that's what I'm supposed to do. That's a good accountability partner, but it's a high pressure. It could actually turn into, you know, while the person might be right, it leads to then a rift in the relationship versus, hey, before that, you said, where do you want to, like, what is your journey in general? Like, if you just know where that person is, whether it's explicit conversation or implicit, you know, that's where they're going. And then the way that you call them out isn't saying you did that. It's, hey, I made an observation. Like, you said that you wanted to go in this way. I just saw that this happened. Maybe I witnessed it wrong. But again, it's not assigning blame. It's, I saw this one thing that's the goal. I saw this, which was different. There's a gap in that,
right?
And I'm just noticing the gap, and I'm just curious where that was. So it's not actually a personal thing, but if you knew that you have that goal and you're observing and you frame the conversation that way, it can be constructive and caring versus like this accusatory.
No, totally. Right. And I think it goes back to recognizing the humanity of the person and them knowing that you're recognizing their own humanity. As somebody who's been called out plenty of times by people, I don't think any of it would have been nearly as effective as, or it was not nearly as effective as people who texted me correct information about me that was constructive, that hurt and stung, but I got it in a little, you know, a quick line on a screen somewhere, and I immediately ascribe them, they're the jerk, and I'm being attacked, and oh, poor, pitiful me, which is gross. We're self-centered, unfortunately. That comes with humanity. All right, well, somehow we've already made it 27 minutes. We're going to take quick break, and then we're going to be right back. And, Haley, I want to dig into the world that you live in and how the sort of countercultural, beautiful thing that you do day in and day out in regards to communication right after we come back.
More of Honest to God is coming up on AM 1160, The Quest.
Let's see. I have Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, and Paramount Plus, Spotify, and Apple Music.
Is that all?
Oh, and HBO Max.
There's nothing wrong with having streaming service subscriptions, but is it helping to bring you and others closer to Christ? Consider making the cost of one of those services to be your monthly donation to The Quest. We're totally listener-supported. We rely on donations from people like you.
And SiriusXM, too.
Please, prayerfully consider making a monthly donation to support AM 1160 The Quest.
And now back to Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? A show for young adults by young adults on AM 1160, The Quest.
Talking about communications, do's and don'ts, and how it affects us. And when we last left off, I said I wanted to jump over to Haley real quick because she's got a very unique sort of lifestyle situation right now that affects communication in a really big way. Can you talk to us
about it a little bit? I go to a very small school in Wyoming that has a cell phone free campus.
Shout it out. You got to say that name of the school again.
Oh, Wyoming Catholic College.
Heck yeah.
It's a wonderful place.
Lander.
Highly recommend. Well, We don't really have a campus.
You can bring your gun to school. You can't bring your cell phone. That is a true story.
Kind of. There's a few issues with that right now, but that's a whole other thing. But it's fine.
That's okay. The next episode of Honest.
Next episode is talking about the minuscule issues. But yeah, so we go all semester without our phones, and only we can check them out if we go out of town, basically. And it's great. It's my favorite. I think one of my favorite.
Where are they? You bring your phone to campus?
They're in a Tupperware bin in the student life office.
Cool. Do you have, like, smuggler phones that people, like,
people
deal?
Totally have burners.
Like, prison just to...
Maybe. Yeah. We have laptops, so we're not completely, like, cut off, I guess. The prefects technically have flip phones, but those are for emergencies. And we have, like, landlines in our apartment, too. So it's really not, like, we just don't have a cell phone where it's, like, easily pull out of your pocket and do whatever.
You just can't be walking down the street and pull out a phone and text someone.
Yeah, which can lead to some communication issues.
Do you have to wear 90s clothes? Kind of like Amish. Like, like a Ninja Turtle.
Lots of hand sport backpacks.
Well, yeah, we're kind of 20 years in the past in general.
That's so cool. But talk about how, because before you went there, you had a phone, right?
I had a phone. I played a lot of chess on it all the time. It's really interesting, kind of the difference in how people talk to each other, because number one, you have to make plans like ahead of time because you can't just text people and find them because it's really difficult to find them, even though the campus is really small. But there's also something about a phone used as kind of a comfort device in uncomfortable situations. So if you're on like a really uncomfortable coffee date and you're like with your friend across from you and you're just like, I don't really know where to go with conversation, so I'm just gonna look at my phone and text my mom, of course. And but yeah, that's not there, and so you kind of have to live in that moment with that person, and you can't kind of duck out with a phone.
What does that do? Just anecdotally in regards to like relationship building, do you think, I mean, I'm sure there's pros and cons to that.
Yeah, it's a lot more confrontational, I guess. Ooh. Like in person, like if you're trying to, like, if you have an issue with somebody, you have to walk up to them and have, that's like, cool, solve the problem with them. You can't just kind of avoid it because you don't see them ever, because you see them all the time. Which is sometimes fun. Just kidding, not fun.
They coach you on those situations, you just kind of have to figure it out.
Yeah, you kind of figure it out. It's a small community, so it's kind of, you kind of figure out how to work with people. Also, just in our curriculum, we have discussion-based classes. So even like putting the no phones aside, that we have a professor that kind of leads a discussion and we talk about the works that we're reading. And that is where the most kind of communication building comes, is because we are trying to have an effective conversation about something and trying to learn from it and gather the knowledge and truth that is in it. But that can be really difficult when people, like, there's the people that want to talk the entire time, or there's people who never talk and have good things to say. And it's kind of trying to figure out, like, what's the best way and how can I best articulate what I'm trying to say to the people around me as well.
Do you find that you're cut off from, do you feel cut off from like, relationships, friends and stuff, even family, back home when you live phoneless, sort of counterculturally? And
Yeah, it's definitely more difficult when you have to have your friends back home email you instead of text you. So, like, but you kind of also see kind of where... I guess from my own experience, like, I have a friend who I've known for a really long time, and I never text her during the semester. Like, we basically don't communicate at all during the semester, but then we'll come back and we'll get coffee and we'll, like, hang out, and it's like everything's back to normal. Yeah. You know, like, it's like nothing's ever changed. But then you can also see other friends where you also don't communicate with them for the entire semester, and then you come back and you see that they've, like, completely changed.
Yeah.
And, like, seeing kind of these, like, the differences in them. And
well, and I don't know how I feel about this, because I want to keep using the word authentic, but I think a better word is traditional, because traditionally speaking, right, if we all lived in the same county 200 years ago, and if we went to the same church, we might see each other every week. Realistically, though, if we live 50 miles apart, we see each other a couple times a year, maybe, if our families are close. Like, I have a colleague, and her grandmother exchanged letters with her grandfather for about 6 months before he visited their farmhouse twice, and the second time he proposed to her, right? After this back and forth of letters, right? And I'm not saying that's more authentic. I want to, for some reason, but I think I'm confusing authentic with, we've done things that way for a long time, which doesn't mean that they're the best way to do it.
But it actually might not be authentic then, because it's interesting. If you're writing a letter and it's, you know, once a week or once a month, you're composing it in a way that's very formal, more or less. Right. It probably gets less formal with more, but versus if you're talking to someone 40 times a day, every day, it's like that seems to be authentic, but also...
Which is better? I'm curious about that.
I don't know.
I think there are pros and cons to both. Mm-hmm. I think each has its place, and I think, like, I think we need to just, like, I think every piece of technology that comes into our lives nowadays, there needs to be, like, a cap on it. There needs to be a place where we say, okay, that's enough. We need that. I don't want this to intrude anymore into my day-to-day life. So I think it's when you go from, like with that person, with the grandparents who only communicated through letters. Like, I bet they had, like, a phenomenal romance, and I bet, like, it was wonderful, and they're still married, I'm guessing.
I think they're dead, but yeah.
Oh, okay. but they were married for their...
But as far as I know, they had a wonderful marriage.
Yeah, exactly. For their wonderful marriage, just through letters and through those, I guess, two in-person interactions. Right. So it's not like those things, like, I guess, text in... old form was letters.
Right.
That's how it was, just much slower versions of text. But you could kind of compose yourself a little bit better and more structurally know what you're going to say instead of getting there and just spitting it all out. And maybe they...
Well, if there's a benefit too, because once again, I'm not saying it was better, but I'm saying the major benefit I would think is I'm going to sit down here, I'm going to spend an hour writing all the things I want to say to this person. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to put it down. I think we should just keep texting, but every text message I send to my wife should be like, "Dearest Angela, many an hour hath passed, and I have missed thee greatly. My heart longs for thee." No, but I think there's some benefit to the other side, too.
I'm curious, who here has been in, like, a long-distance, like, to the point of, like, writing letters, even in long-distance relationships?
Not writing letters, but... So, funny enough, I was on a cruise, and I met him on a cruise. His family lived in Georgia. But he lived in San Diego and everything. And so instead, and I was busy working, he was busy working. And so instead of, like, texting, we'll be like, "Hey, like, good morning." We'll check in with each other the day, but we'll call each other and FaceTime each other at night. Like, "How was your day?" and stuff like that. So we wouldn't send each other letters, we would call. Because I don't like texting. I think you can misconstrue a text in a way because...
Totally.
Because I can be like, "Oh, I'm at lunch." And he can be like, "What's wrong? Are you mad?" I'm like, "No, I'm just at lunch." So I'm very more on, like, "Let's, like, call me, FaceTime me and stuff," and then text.
My wife will send me text messages at, like, 1 p.m. when I'm at school that'll say, like, "We need to talk." And I've been married to my wife for 12 years. Like, I don't have any deep, dark secrets or anything. But every time I get that, like, 15-year-old boy, like, sinking feeling of what is going on.
Yep.
Is she running off with a cabana boy? Like, have I done some horrible thing and haven't realized it? No, I hear that, though. What were you going to say, JJ?
I mean, first of all, that I think somebody should write a book about that. I just love the lead up to that. We met on a cruise. He's in San Diego.
We're really good friends now, actually. Fun fact, he now lives in New York with his sister.
Really?
Yeah.
He's going all the way around.
So you're not still dating him? Or
no, okay. We're really good friends. We broke up, I think, like three months into relationship. So yeah.
But that does sound like a very interesting relationship. And I think with all these things, I think we shouldn't be discriminatory about, like, saying one type is bad. Mm-hmm. I think when it comes down to it, we're trying to communicate. We're trying to reveal ourselves. And what I think is important is knowing your strong suits and your weak suits and figuring out how to be passable in the areas you're bad at.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good at face-to-face, and I'm bad at texting, so I try and prioritize face-to-face, try and find ways to see people face-to-face. But with texting, I've realized I need to be good about just knowing what I want to say. And I think that's the hard part about texting. Face-to-face, you don't have to know what you want to say. You only have to feel it, and people will pick up on the feelings.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've kind of picked up on, because I consider myself a pretty good texter, but mostly but only with people that I know in person.
That's good.
Because I can know what people mean by what they say.
Right.
And so I think when you combine the two, when you are not solely communicating, if your only interaction with this person is through text messages and their texts are the only thing you know about them, then you have a very limited view of who they are. But if you have those texts in combination with knowing them very well in person, then you can, even with texts, I guess, with emotion behind them, you can kind of know what those emotions are and where those influences come from that elicit the text.
My big fear is that we emotionally stunt ourselves in some way by removing what you were saying, right? Where we have these relationships that are solely based mm-hmm. on something. I'll give an example, and this might sound weird, but it applies to you, Producer Ben. Every time I say goodbye to Producer Ben, I uh-huh. always say, love you, Ben.
I right? say, I love you.
And I don't think that's weird. Obviously, I'm not romantically in love with Ben, right? He's my brother in Christ, and I love him. And I think that's a totally appropriate and normal thing to do. And I'm a big history guy. I read a whole lot of biographies, and I get into this. I was just reading a biography on Thomas Jackson, right? Stonewall Jackson from the Civil War. And they included all these letters that he had written. And he would talk to his friends, right? To his guy friends, and he would say these beautiful things to them that were just so they were gorgeous, they were right? so sweet. And I'm trying to boil that down with I love you, Ben, but for some reason it feels uncomfortable initially when I'm having that conversation with you, or when I'm right. trying to be emotionally vulnerable is not the right word, just open expressive. With other people in mm-hmm. a way that I feel like I shouldn't be. I'm not talking about romantic relationships, and I'm wondering if that is because of the modern technological world that we're hanging out in.
Also, the assumptions around any of that in this world and kind of tags right. with that. Mm-hmm. I was mm-hmm. curious in the long distance. You said you did long distance too.
I did.
When it kind of going to the theme of like doing or communicating what you say and all of that. Have you guys found? This is something that I guess the experience doing long distance or not and combining all the different pieces of like mm-hmm. where you could text if you kind of like read a book together, something like that, where, you know, it's like we're talking about like the meta of conversing, but I also think like what do you converse that can be positive conversations and for young adults? I mean, are we the only ones married in the room? Are you engaged?
No, yeah. Very much single.
Well, like... It's something that I found is great in previous relationships because it actually worked for great in different ways. Mm-hmm. But like you could say you agree in person. Hey, let's read this book together. And then, hey, what chapter are you on? Did you get there? You text. And then you're FaceTiming at the night. What did you talk about? And then having the books be of substance so you can learn about each other. But then you gain context.
That's cool.
And so, I mean... Like the, if you haven't read it, I mean, most people have, but like the 5 love languages, you read that together, or How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk, or it's a great book.
How to Save Your Marriage before you meet your spouse. That's an incredible one.
Yeah. And so like books like that where, you know, you have context around instead of just like your daily lives, which is daily life catch up is great, but it's also kind of grows in this deeper intellectual relationship. But then if you can do it where you learn about each other the same way, then it can combine all those different, then it doesn't matter how you're talking about it, you're actually talking about something of substance so that you can learn about that other person. So if it is miscommunicated in text, you're like, oh, that's wrong. There's certain things that my wife now, because I know her so well, uh-huh. like if I will say something to her in any given medium, and any outsider would have been like, well, that was rough. And she would just be like, no, he's just this. Or mm-hmm. she'd say something to me, and I'd even be able to say like, well, that's not normal. Instead of taking offense, I'm like, is everything all right? Because it was just so out of norm, but because you have that well-rounded view of someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as a side note, I just want to say couples reading books together, I've always thought is one of the cutest things ever.
That's awesome.
Nothing causes me to, like, pang romantically more than hearing about that.
That's so cool.
But I think what you're getting into is kind of, you're talking about, like, just practicing communication for the sake of communication, and the outlet or, like, medium of that is, like, reading books. And I think it's an important thing to be able to recognize communication as, like, it's a skill. It's a skill. And finding, like, ways to practice that with the people you care about is awesome.
Well, and it's also quality versus quantity mm-hmm. and knowing your relationship with the other person. Because yeah. it's like you're saying, if I'm in a potential romantic relationship with somebody, obviously I'm going to speak to them differently than I do my colleague at work mm-hmm. or something. And my communication is going to be different. But what I can't do is sacrifice the quality of communication, like reading a book together or saying prayers together at, you know, over Zoom if he lives in San Francisco or whatever.
And by the then way, praying together is probably the best thing you yes, can do as a couple.
Yes. But, yeah. The best thing my wife and did when we were dating was we would pray the rosary together every single night. And wow. It was awesome. And she like kind of made me do it at first, and she's like, super pretty.
Props to you. We just started doing that. So.
Now it's actually hard for us to pray together now, because like right after we get done doing our, right after we get the kids down to bed, what we do is as a family, we all pray. And praying with kids is so much different than praying with my spouse. But praying with my spouse is so much more important, because my primary vocation is to her, not my kids.
That's the point of the podcast tonight. Challenge to you when you go
yes.
home.
Yes, totally. But it's anyway, I think that it's a quality versus quantity thing, because if you're having, so I talk to so many college age people, right, who will have these relationships with people, but it's so surface level and shallow. Mm-hmm. Be it, and I'm not just talking about romantic relationships, but I'm talking about friend relationships. Mm-hmm. So many guys who can't have an in-depth conversation. I think we talked about this mm-hmm. on the masculinity episode with other guys. And it took me until I was a grown man to really realize I've never actually had a male friend. That's what I mean. I do now, but I had that time and I was like, oh my gosh, I've had lots of guys that I used because they were cool or they thought I was cool, and we would go do this together and that together. We'd hang out. We'd spend time together, but there's no depth. They didn't know who I was as a person, and I didn't know who they were. And I think that's exacerbated sometimes by, well, I talk to them every day. Send them a Snapchat. I got my streaks going. 600 days.
We send memes back and forth to each other.
Yeah. I some good memes.
Yeah, I kind of have that. My, I guess, two closest male friends that I've been friends with them since sophomore year of high school. Great guys, Guillermo and Zach are their names. And I was just thinking about this, that we, like, I don't really have that relationship with them, that it's like this like deep relationship, and I really want to. Yeah. Like it's something that they're in Florida right now, so it's kind of hard to do that when they're only here for like a week or two at a time,
right.
And we play Dungeons and Dragons whenever they're here.
That's the best way to communicate.
But I remember one of the best like hangouts we've had was at like 4 a.m. one time after like a party. It was just like the three, or I think it was us and one other guy. We're all just hanging out in my basement, and then we just started, like, I don't know how it got started, but getting in these like really deep conversations about like how we felt about ourselves and about the world
yeah,
around us,
totally.
And it was just one of the most like fulfilling things in the entire
yeah.
world.
I'm
done.
I think what you also said that stuck out to me was like the practicing conversations. I didn't think of it that way, but I think one thing that I didn't realize at the time, I kind of realized I was doing it, but not in the way, is my wife, she'll, if you ever talked to her about us talking, I would be self-reflective on how I would communicate in previous relationships, and with her, mm-hmm. I was kind of like oddly so, saying like, hey, this is what I am like. Like, I basically paid attention to like the meta of like how I communicate.
Yeah.
And I would be kind of forward. I'm like, when, like, just so you know, if and when something like this happens, this is probably how I'm going to respond. And this is how you should, like, mm-hmm. it's how I recommend dealing with it. And that may not even be, like, my right response. But in the moment, I recommend maybe doing it this way. And at first, she'll even say, like, I thought it was the weirdest thing ever. But sure enough, when those things happened, she had, like, her manual. So she wasn't surprised. It was like, well, this actually is happening the way it is. And so I think for like younger people out there, like even whether it's learned through mistakes that you make, you're like, oh, I kind of deal in this way. Or even to you, it's like you say, hey, I'm bad at text. I'm yeah. going to try to get better. But when I don't respond, like just know that it's not that I don't want to respond to you. I'm not good at it. Mm-hmm. But also, if you do say that, don't be afraid to, you know, just yell at me or like to follow up.
Yeah.
And like do that. Like I give you permission to do that. Like that meta of that is actually huge, because that person, they respond, you've given them the permission to say, hey, three more texts, pay attention to me, funny, I'm yelling at you. Like that's a phrase I use. Like I give you permission to yell at me. And then so when my friends, if I don't respond to them, they're like, hey, this is me yelling at you. I'm like, okay, great.
That's awesome. Well, and a lot of that is some know thyself stuff,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
Because, and I think that's a real sign of maturity too, is when you start to realize, and this is something I still struggle with. I've talked about that a lot on the show. I'm prideful. I'm arrogant. I deal with a lot of that. And I have to acknowledge these things that are wrong about me and fight against the vanity to pretend like they're not, those aren't issues. And that's easier with romantic relationships, obviously, once you're into that sort of depth of a relationship with somebody. But it is just as important with, like, with friendships, right? With familial relationships. apologizing to my kids is one of my favorite parenting wins that I feel like I have. And I only do it because I had a really great dad who sat me down and gave me advice one time. And I was just picking his brain about, like, you seem awesome and your kids seem great. How do you do it? And he was going through this laundry list. And one of the things is I said I was sorry. I told him, hey, I shouldn't have done that. And this is what I meant and whatever. Mm-hmm. And that applies to everything. And I, once again, I don't know if that's a symptom. I feel like it's more of a symptom of the human condition than our technological reliance and everything. But we often don't want to have that vulnerability to admit, like, I'm not perfect and I'm really crappy in a lot of ways, and you need to know that. Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry, Ben, were you about to say something? Oh, sorry, I thought I saw a hand. Yeah, JJ.
I was going to say, I think that's also a really important thing is communicating with kids, whether it's your kids, which you have experience mm-hmm. with, or my younger siblings. Yeah. And it's, kids are surprisingly smart. Mm-hmm. And that what you said about being able to apologize to kids, it just made me think of what I've been trying to do with my younger siblings more is being willing to, like, yeah, apologize and also let them know, like, when I'm not necessarily the most reasonable.
Right.
Kind of that, like, know thyself sort of thing. Once you tell them that, they're usually, even the little kids are willing to work with you. Like, sometimes they'll come up to me and they'll be wanting to, like, talk about a whole bunch of stuff like little kids do. And I feel like the typical response is to be like, hey, I'm busy, go away, go do something else. But what I've started trying to do more is, like, try and pay attention to them. But if I can't, I'll be like, hey, I'm sorry, I've been at work for a long time and I'm not mentally focused enough
right.
to listen to everything you're saying. Mm-hmm. But maybe tomorrow when it's a little bit earlier, we can talk about this.
Yeah,
totally. Even that acknowledgement of, like, I meant that the feelings I had were real, but how I conveyed them was not appropriate. Mm-hmm, that's yeah. something, especially with my wife and with my work colleagues, and I work with some amazing people. That's something that happens a lot where I've got to come back and say, all right, so my opinion hasn't changed. That's exactly how I felt. But I definitely did not go about that the right way. And I'm so, I really shouldn't have done that. I apologize. And when you do that with people, it's almost like they're totally taken off guard. And they're like, oh, no, actually me. I spent yesterday, part of why I love my gig where I'm where I'm working right now. I spent like 5 minutes on the phone arguing with an employee about why something was my fault and not their fault while they were arguing the other way. Right? It's like, no, the ball was in my court. I dropped the ball, not you. And it was great. And it was because of those communication skills that were built by us, I think, purposefully trying to strip away that vanity and that just self-centeredness that we
all have. Do you find that when you apologize, and at least the people that have become to accustomed to know that you will apologize, that it gives you a little more slack on the front end?
Totally.
So it's like, if you, totally. I found with, yeah, either like friends or my wife, because you go through the hard work of trying to just suck it in, you know that you did wrong and you just mm-hmm. do the apology, but then it gets easier over time because, you know, it's less prideful because it's like,
right.
I really am not perfect and mm-hmm. proof and proof and proof again. But in the moment when you do mess up, because that person, the hypothesis that I have is, like, because you know that person is probably going to apologize later,
right.
you can just be more of like, I'll take it now.
Yeah.
You're going to realize and you're going to come back. So I'm not going to draw this out for 3 hours. And you can just be like, hey, we're going to pause this. And or my wife will say, hey, we're going to pause this right now.
Yeah.
And we're going to come back. And sure enough, it's like, I'll go apologize or vice versa. But it doesn't draw out because, you know, like, if you know the person, again, you've done the work to get to know that individual, friend or otherwise, you know, this isn't the norm. Something's going on here. This isn't our life or death. We can sock it.
Right.
And I'll either apologize or they'll apologize. And there's more to this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, knowing our own emotions and how we react to things, I think, is so huge. Something that we brought up at the beginning of the show, or I don't think we said it on air, but something that I've dealt with a lot in my personal life is saying the right thing, the thing that should be said at the wrong time or the wrong context. And I'll give you an example from some young people that I was teaching a class last year, and I just given this big talk, and most of the things that I give big talks on are things that I'm dealing with, and so they need to hear it. And it was about, like, you got to call your friends out, right? If somebody's doing X, Y, or Z and it's bad for their soul, you need to tell them. You need to sit down. And if you're not, like, that's what a real friend does. And it was true. Like, those were good. It was good things to say. But then I had a group of kids who took it and they ran with it in a bad way where they essentially cornered somebody and were like, and you're doing this and you're doing this. And I don't think they said you're going to go to hell. But I mean, it was that kind of context. Like, you're doing all of these things. And as soon as that, like, that all came back to me, I was like, oh, that's totally my fault. That's totally, and I wanted to go and, like, apologize to people for them, which would have made it so much worse. But that's a, that's been a tough thing, especially early in my conversion when I was really overzealous and I was treating life like a, like an AA meeting or something. Like, I had to go solve all these problems right now and have these conversations and do this and fix this. And it ended up screwing stuff up a lot. I don't know what y'all's thoughts are on that.
I mean, I've definitely had that experience where I think it's because when I think something's important, I think that automatically means that there's a time urgency to it and I have to do it. But what I've realized is I'm not necessarily good at that. When I play, like, the video games where you have to, like amass your army and take someone out, I'm not the one who ever is like, let's hit him early. I'm always like, I'm going to take my time, plant the seed,
I like the analogy.
And then come at it. And I realize I'm better at that. So I've started making my relationships more about that. I'm going to take my time, plant the seeds, and just the only constant is I try and love the people that I'm in relationships with. And everything kind of falls into place if you give it long enough.
And remembering, too, that all humans are humans and all people are dealing with all this crap day in and day out that we don't understand. And I keep going back to that theme of self-centeredness, but it's so true. We forget that we are not the main character in everybody's stories, and we forget that, just like I'm not sharing with y'all any of the major issues that I have in my life because I'm on air right now and sitting in a radio station, but your friends and the people that you're not friends with, but your acquaintances, people who you meet and who you work with, they've got so much that they're dealing with that it's not all you. Like, and I struggle with that too because I think I'm the center of the universe and I have to constantly remind myself that I'm not. And their reactions are not all dependent on me. So, anyway, communication. Speaking of communication. Loaded questions,
loaded
Junior.
Questions.
We didn't get to it last time, so we're going to do it this
time. This time.
My favorite.
Dude, I love loaded questions. Haley, you pick your favorite.
Okay.
And then...
How does this work? We just answer any of them?
Pick one. Yeah, and it's designed for, like, 8-year-olds, which makes it fun, but you still have to answer the question.
That's the level of my sense of humor.
Yeah, no, that's why this is perfect for the show. All right, let's see. I'll start. What always makes you sweat?
All right. Your wings.
All right. No, there's one time. One time, not always. What always makes me sweat... I'm gonna go practical on this. I do a lot of hunting and fishing and cold weather kind of stuff. And I put on 10,000 different layers of thick, bulky Carhartt everything, and I walk out into the woods, and it's like the other day I was duck hunting, it was 5 degrees, right? So I go out there, it's 5 degrees. We had that big cold front that moved through. I'm busting through ice, and I get done, and I'm literally like, I've negated all of the warm weather gear I was wearing because I'm soaked to the bone in sweat from the inside out, and I get to sit there and worry my toes are going to fall off for 20 minutes. So I always over prepare for cold weather and then end up sweating. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have today for the radio. If you want to keep listening to this episode, be sure to head over to YouTube or check us out on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
This has been Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? A show for young adults by young adults on AM 1160, The Quest.